The following content is intended for people who are blind or print impaired.
Engage.
You are listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm Chris Skidmore, and this is Tech Tips. When you think of games, and especially video games, you don't necessarily think of people who are blind or have low vision playing them. Well, that's just not the case. This month, I'm going to be wrapping up my conversation with Gary Bartos and Matthew Schifrin about accessible gaming. That's what's coming up this month on Tech Tips. Previously on Tech Tips, what makes a game accessible and why does it matter?
It matters because if you want them to be able to play your game and buy your game, enjoy your game, then you need to take certain considerations into account to make sure that these people with various disabilities, be they, can play your game. It's also very important just from a social inclusion standpoint, in the sense the fact that the disabled person is able to play against and beat the stuffing out of their able-bodied colleagues is a wonderful feeling.
Accessibility is a right. Mm-hmm. And if accessibility is a right, then accessibility should be universal. It has to be an equitable experience.
How has accessibility in games evolved?
It's evolved through efforts by these kind of trailblazers in the video game space. Steve Saylor, Ross Miner, the late Brandon Cole, Janissary, who is a video game audio description writer. These people who are not only consultants, not only experts, but they are the ones who want to play the games and enjoy the games.
What actually makes a game accessible? And at the same time, what are some of the most common complaints about why a game is inaccessible?
Screen readers. Consoles have built-in screen readers. That's great. But the game must also support these screen readers and leverages screen readers. Then come the actual settings so that the game can be played. Auditory waypoints that make sounds. Automatic aiming. Sound cues for when your health gets low, when an enemy is about to attack you. Very specific 3D sounds so that you can figure out exactly where enemies are around you. Inventory management and menus within the game that are read. Tooltips and tutorial text that is read. Accessible maps and points where you can basically fast travel to different locations and ways to drop waypoints so that you know where you are and where you're off to. But when we think about visual impairment, things such as high contrast, very adjustable difficulty levels. Puzzles. If a puzzle is inaccessible, offering skip options so that you can just skip it.
Colors. It's another big one for people who are colorblind, so sighted but colorblind.
Let's talk equity in accessible gaming. What is SPLAT?
It's an acronym. And so the types of equity in gaming. Equity in this case meaning, you know, an equivalent experience. So SPLAT, social equity, price equity. This one gets a little technical. Late load or label. Get into that. Equity. Actions, things you can do in game time.
Social equity, that means how easy is this to play for the disabled person?
Price equity.
The thing with price equity is board games are really, really expensive. But the trouble is because everything is handmade and hand-adapted and 3D printed, things are exceedingly expensive. Blind people do not have that level of disposable income.
We're now up to L in SPLAT, which stands for?
Load or labor. Cognitive load, which means the effort to think through something, and then kinematic or physical load, which is the physical effort.
And now the conclusion. Let's move on to the next letter in SPLAT. I think we're up to the A, and what was the A covering? Actions.
Yeah, okay. Actions. Social price load actions means like turns or can you do everything? I don't know, Matt, you've probably got examples where you could say where there are certain parts of a game that maybe you could play part of the game, but not the whole game.
We see it in video games a lot. There are points where they call them accessibility blockers. Video game experts, blind ones are going to say, hey, I don't know, when you're trying to run away from the dinosaur, you're going to have to jump over something and the audio system won't warn you. So I don't know, count 7 steps and then double tap X. But in some cases, people have had to create extremely convoluted workarounds because it's the kind of thing that's much easier if you have a magically appearing sighted person. But if you don't, here's a possible workaround. And sometimes people are stuck on a map wandering around for 15, 20 minutes they've followed some waypoint somewhere and the waypoint is assuming that they know where they are. And the waypoint keeps digging at them and they're right on top of it, and there's just nothing there. And they say, okay, I'm going to give up. I'm going to restart from the save point. And they do, and then it only takes them 5 minutes to get to the next objective. Yes. For the blind gamer, that's just how it goes. There are accessibility blockers that you have to think about and worry about, and the less of them, the better. But even games that are supposedly accessible and very accessible, even they have problems. All I'm saying is that actions, you're going to see actions that are accessibility based, but also there could be actions that are gameplay based in terms of how the game itself is played.
These are designed realities. Someone consciously made design choices that left open the possibility that someone could get stuck. And there is a real world analogy that I've seen, being a sighted person, going to a group of blind people interested in tech. And, you know, the meeting was over, people are going home or going on to the next thing or whatever. And because of the design of a sidewalk, one of the attendees, someone I knew who's a cane user, actually kind of got stuck, like turned a little bit too early, still a sidewalk, came down, came back to the, like, made an almost 180 degree curving turn. It's harder to keep track of, you know, direction, and approached a door. That was a door on the building that he just left.
Yep.
And yeah, so just because of the design of the stairways and the sidewalks and the fact that they're supposed to be talking crosswalk signs that, of course, in this one area where a bunch of blind people meet, that's the one area where they don't work consistently. They're broken. And just seeing this, like, people just to get out of this building and then to go down these steps, the steps are very wide with only some railings, and then to take a wrong turn because it's not distinguishable. So this happens in civil engineering, and consequently it also happens in games. And, you know, what's the common element? Sighted people.
Those pesky sighted people.
Yeah.
That brings us up to the last letter in Splant, which is T, and that stands for time. What do you mean by time equity?
How long does it take you to play this game as opposed to a non-disabled person? If it takes you 2-3 hours to play a game that a sighted person can do in half an hour, you're not going to play that game. Yeah. It's going to exhaust you. And as a blind person, things are already tiring as they are. The goal of a game is just to have fun. If it's going to be way more tiring for you, it's going to be much more difficult for you as the blind person to want to do it. The fun gets sucked out of it. Just a quick example, I have friends who like playing really complicated games. These games that have massive tomes for rule books that you can bench press with. Some of these are supposedly accessible. And I read some of these books and I realize, you know, for a blind person, this is going to take 2 to 3 times as long as for a sighted person because they won't be able to see their cards and they won't be able to see what other people are playing. And it's going to have a huge impact on their memory, huge amount of cognitive load. And so I just say, I don't want to play this stuff. Is it a good game? Yes. Do I have enough brain space for it? No.
In a presentation we actually bought in a store, Dungeon Mayhem, which is a card-based game, to illustrate all of these things, social equity, price equity, load equity, action equity, time equity. And the time one was a really straightforward example. So Dungeon Mayhem is essentially this sort of on-ramp to role-playing games in the Dungeons & Dragons tradition, but it's a card game. So it's printed cards. And so if you hand Matt one of these cards and say, hey, Matt, what card is this?
I'd have to scan it with my phone, which right. is a whole other adventure.
But let's say you do.
It
you
takes know, what's time for there? The phone to read the thing. That is, assuming that it scans it correctly, doesn't garble 3/4 of the text on it.
Or that the card is turned the right way around.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it's not flipped over.
It's funny that you mention that because there's a game I actually enjoy playing called Cards Against Humanity. And when we play it with friends, my wife and I have to play as a team while everybody else plays solo. And the reason for that, I can't read the cards.
Oh, is that the main barrier for you is the size of the print?
Or... Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, think you're sighted. Think Trivial Pursuit, yeah. You know, oh, boy, and how small Whoa, that was.
That's
yeah.
tiny.
Exactly.
That's tiny.
And
it's
you
a
know,
lot.
It's not that small, but it doesn't miss it by much.
What point size font would you need?
It would need yeah. to be
comfy, not just barely.
Like 20.
Oh, that's totally doable.
Yeah.
Barker. And there's an accessibility kit for it that 64-ounce games make.
Oh, they did.
That's
cool.
Yeah, it's oh, one of the cheaper ones.
I didn't know
but
that.
But Chris, in your case, you wouldn't even need all the QR codes and all those shenanigans. I think 24-point fonting it. I mean, heck, if they have large print books, large print board games are no. I mean, 20-point yeah. font is not a big ask.
Just basically copy the game. Not suggesting anyone do anything illegal, but you basically copy the game for your own personal use, and you don't sell it. And it's just say, hey, I want this to be this, you know, if there's a graphic and it doesn't actually contribute to the game, like get rid of all extraneous graphics. Just
yeah.
without killing a design aesthetic, or put them on the backside of the card or whatever.
And maybe even do some kind of color inversion, making it white on black.
How do you do with yellow on black?
It's not as good, but I can make it work.
White on black, you know, why not?
Tech Tips is on the North Carolina Reading Service.
We are talking with Gary Bartos and Matthew Schifrin about accessible gaming. And guys, I'm wondering, are we getting close to a point where game developers are taking accessibility into consideration when designing a game?
Kind of. I don't think they would do it unless disabled people do not pester the living daylights out of them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some exceptions. For example, indie people are generally much more amenable to accessiblifying their stuff. There's a game called As Dusk Falls, for example, Xbox exclusive kind of choose your own adventure type thing. And that one supposedly was fairly easy to accessiblify because the blind people got in touch with the developers and said, hey, here's a very practical solution. Here's how you'd implement it. Would you like us to help you? And the developers were like, yeah, sure. We're interested in making it accessible to more people. Another thing that I didn't really have a chance to mention that is helpful in video games for blind people is audio description and the descriptive narration of various in-game cutscenes and such. Because if you don't have that, then even if you can play the game, you're flustered as to what's happening half the time.
And the people we talk to are largely indie game developers, you know, students even. You know, you can talk to the actual designer directly without having to go through a lot of stuff. But you do have to make good trouble. Think any minority community this country, if they didn't stick their necks out and risk a lot.
It all comes back to self-advocate.
Yes.
If you don't self-advocate, then nothing's going to get done.
Or it won't get done right, or it won't quite gel. Personal story, I would say, is so there's Stonemaier Games, which is a fantastic small game publisher, right? So Wingspan's award-winning game, Scythe, just a lot of games that great thought went into, fantastic game designers who were really enthusiastic about making great games. And my favorite board game is Wingspan. And then there was a beautiful video game version of it. Gorgeous visuals and the music. It's very peaceful. I came into the game during the pandemic and I just watch it and listen to it. Originally, I tried to contact the game designer and she said, oh, you should talk to the publisher, Stonemaier Games. And what happened is I provided design suggestions for the game. And there was a guy that I actually contracted with. Two of us at least provided design suggestions. Some of mine made it into the, we call vision-friendly card sets, where you buy the board game and then there's a complete set of cards with bigger text and the graphics are reduced and the contrast is a bit improved. So these slight changes without killing the aesthetic of the game that would allow people to play the game with less eye strain and so on. So I'd say people on the high end of low vision or who may not technically qualify in this country as having a legal visual impairment, but you know, have some significant disability, or like me, I wear reading glasses now. That actually got printed, and there were a lot of people said, yes, I would buy this, I would play this. So it was a lot of money to make additional cards, but not enough people bought the card sets. There was some effort online to call attention to these card sets that you can buy. They are separate from the game, and you can integrate them with the game. He made an effort, Jamie in particular, and the rest of his small firm made an effort there, and they were the first company I know of that did this for a game that is a award-winning game, not long after it was published. And it just didn't get sufficient traction. So are developers doing it? Yeah, but it's going to require continued push from the community to make sure that the publishers make these changes and that they understand that the changes are appreciated.
Definitely. What are some of the most popular games that are out right now that are accessible?
When it comes to video games, there are a couple of standouts there. Stardew Valley, for example, fully accessible with modifications. There's also Balatro, which is kind of a tricky, cardy game. Slay the Spire and Slay the Princess, both RPG-type games. We also have The Last of Us and The Last of Us 2, which are both accessible. Spider-Man 2 from Insomniac and the Miles Morales Spider-Man game, which can be a little bit persnickety accessibility-wise, but they do work. Assassin's Creed Odyssey and Star Wars Outlaws from Ubisoft. I don't mean to be listing off stuff, but this is accessibility standouts. The Mortal Kombat games from NetherRealm and publisher whose name I'm blanking on. That's Mortal Kombat 1. I think 11 is also accessible. There is Diablo 4, which has recently gotten some new accessibility upgrades. There is also some text-based games. Path of Exiles, I think, is one of them, which is a text-based, I think it's kind of resource management-ish. Forza Motorsport, if you're into racing, fully accessible. And when I say fully accessible, I mean for blind people. I can't speak to other folks. As Dusk Falls, also accessible. And Factorio, also accessible.
Okay. Wow. That's...
Zork might fall in that category for those who remember Zork.
all of the interactive fiction. Yeah. Gary's joking, but I mean, blind people, a lot of their first game experiences, at least mine, I got into interactive fiction because the Braille computer I was using had an interactive fiction interpreter built into it. Yeah. And playing all of those Infocom games and other places, and people are still making interactive fiction even now.
Fortress may be accessible because apparently it's insanely complex. I've never played it. I've just read about it. But it finally got a real visual user interface, but it was essentially, I don't know. There could well be an accessibility mod for that, but I'm not even sure if it would have to be that complicated because it's largely text, story, understanding patterns, and just assuming that your character, your fortress, and all your dwarves are going to die. It's exceedingly difficult. But it is, so for people that want really deep complexity, Dwarf Fortress, I say that not having played the game, it is essentially a text-based 2D game, resources and insane complexity, physical modeling, all that, yeah.
My head hurts.
Yeah. Sorry to even, but still, they deserve it.
It's all good. It's all good.
There's also, if people are into word games, the Wordle from the random COVID guy who sold it to the New York Times, whose name I'm blanking on, that's accessible. And crosswords. If you're into crosswords, there's a accessible app called 4Down for iPhones. And there's also some other new crossword app whose name I do not know. New York Times one is kind of sort of accessible. And the New Yorker Mini, I think, is also accessible.
I got you. So with the advent of new technologies like VR and haptic feedback and other devices, how far away do you think we are to being able to game like in the movie and book Ready Player One, where it's just, you know, totally
3 years ago?
3 years ago? Oh, really?
The technology exists.
It does. The trouble is not only making it mass consumable, but making people want to use this stuff.
That makes sense.
And there is a problem. There's an ethical problem that I see. Y'all could have a totally different opinion. There are a lot of people for whom VR, so virtual reality, meaning you are in a purely constructed reality.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be who you want in that. Like in Ready Player One, you can adopt these different personas. You can have a user handle. No one really knows who you are in real life. They don't know that you're some teenage kid living you know, in these containers.
Yeah.
You know, with the force feedback, where essentially you really feel like you're in the game, you're in this virtual world. So that is great. There's a danger there for some people, and there's a danger in what can happen, which is that if there is a constructed world that you play in, do you really understand the motives of the person who is constructing it?
Okay.
And what it means, and if you get lost in this, for some people, this could be a life-changing experience, and that is great. And there won't be just one, but the danger is that because this reality, this virtual reality, can be constructed in different ways, that it can be constructed in a way that is exceedingly appealing, just like a lot of games are now, such that it pulls people in. And if this is, you know, imagine something like if you were to combine Reddit with, I don't know, Star Wars with force feedback, and you're essentially in this world as a complete character. I'll go with the Star Wars analogy. And then when you're years into it, you realize it's the Empire actually controls this world, not the Alliance. So that's a real concern. I mean, they're concerned with any technology, but I prefer augmented reality or extended reality for practical reasons too, because you can game in the real world and it ties things to the real world. You can learn about the real world through gaming.
Yeah.
And so that technology, as Matt was saying, it exists. Is it mass produced? No, but it's beyond proof of concept that all of the elements are there. And it would include things like 3D sound, which is just in a matter of years is much more widely spread than it used to be, where even big name companies, you know, I would contact them and they're like, oh, no, we don't do that. We can't do that yet. Or there would be a mod where someone would add 3D sound. So sound that has a location around your head, and how you even do that, blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of technical difficulties. It doesn't work for everybody yet. But all the bits and pieces that are necessary to make sort of a universally accessible extended reality, not only do they exist, but in some cases you can experience it. And the problem is sometimes like, oh, it's there if you're typically sighted or if you can read English.
Yeah.
Text. So there are barriers.
Or from a motion standpoint, can you move a hand? Can you move a finger?
That makes perfect sense.
Tech Tips is on the North Carolina Reading Service.
We are talking with Gary Bartos and Matthew Schifrin about accessible gaming. And guys, with all the talking that we've been doing about how games are accessible and how they're accessible, if someone is interested in purchasing a game, but they want to see if they're going to be able to play it, how can they find out if a game is accessible and how accessible it is before they fork out the bucks for it?
Google it. Go to YouTube. Go to the channels of these accessibility experts. Go to Steve Saylor. Go to Ross Miner. Go to, I think Ian Hamilton is another one of these people.
The same thing you talk about games at all or no? He doesn't focus more on tech.
I think he's more tech-based.
Yeah.
But just go to these people's YouTube channels and then go to Reddit. Because
Reddit,
on some of these subreddits, you're going to find people asking, hey, which video games are accessible? People are going to give them answers. Also, go to audiogames.net. They have a forum there. And a lot of people, if they are modifying a video game or if they have a new version, they're going to post it. And they're going to say, hey, I don't know, I just modded whatever, Still Wakes the Deep, for example, even though that one's not accessible, just the first game I can think of. And that's a place where they should go. But that research is very important, because if they miscalculate and the game's not accessible, then they're out however many dollars video games are these days, and now they have a thing they can't use.
And that makes perfect sense. We've been talking about accessible gaming and how it applies to video games, board games, or even card games. If someone would like to discuss this with you further or maybe have you do a presentation for them, how can they go about getting in contact with you?
In our case, for Bricks for the Blind, we are at info@bricksfortheblind.org. Well, bricks, like building bricks, for FORtheBlind.org. We are also on Instagram at @bricks4theblind.
Gotcha. Gary, how can folks get in contact with you?
You can just go through my company website. So it's Echobatics. That's E as in elephant, C as in Charlie, H as in history, O as in Omega, B as in Bravo, A as in Alpha, T as in Thomas, I as in
Indigo.
Island.
Indigo.
Indigo. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Forgotten. And then X, as in what else is there?
X-ray.
Xylophones. Echobatics, X-ray. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Should have you do it. Echobatics. So it's echo, as in echo. Bat, as in the animal. I love bats. And IX, because I'm a Gen Xer and I have to end company names with an IX or ICA. Matt was the one who actually suggested going with IX instead of IC. So echobatics.com. You don't remember. We were sitting in the cafe. Yeah. And it was also one braille cell shorter. So
That time thing coming back to play.
Yes. No, it's we were at the cafe that we'd first meet at several times when you were So anyway, so Echobatics, and if you've got .com and you can find things there, there is a page about with links about accessible gaming.
Yeah.
And so that changes over time. And so it has even the brochure for Matt and me, we're giving our presentation at a local place, and then I just update it. So information comes in, meet new people. One of us meets someone new, and it's like, oh hey, and then I'll add to it. So that's another way. Or someone can email me directly. That's perfectly fine.
Okay.
So Gary@echobatics.com, one R in Gary. So G as in gorilla, A as in alpha, R as in Robert, Y as in
yes.
Gary@echobatics.com.
Awesome. And is there anything either of you would like to add that I may have missed?
If you're interested in more in video gaming from the perspective of people with other disabilities, physical motor ones, for example, the Disabled Gamers subreddit
on Reddit has a lot of very useful, insightful info from people who, I don't know, if they're a C6 quad, for example, they can only move their tongue or use eye tracking to select on-screen elements or whatever. That is the place where you will see a lot of disabled gamers and can get insight from them as to how they play.
Awesome.
So, disabled gamers, go to a subreddit. If you have a disability, if you're blind, there's R blind, low vision, you know, all these other things. And you can ask questions there. Yeah.
If you're a blind gamer, there's now also r/blindgamers.
Oh,
okay.
I would say that. And the, one of the last things is we could keep going and going and going. It's like, is there anything else to say? I don't know. Do we have another couple of weeks? on this, Matt and or I are available to talk and to give feedback on games.
Absolutely.
Developers. Yeah. So we want to talk to active developers. So not someone who is just learning how games work. We'd be happy to talk to companies, and we're available in different ways. We have to date just given presentations and places. And we've talked to, we were at PAX East, which is a big gaming conference here. Walked a lot of the floor, saw Steve Saylor, talked to Steve Saylor, sat at a gaming table that Steve Saylor ran. And we met some people who were pretty enthusiastic about accessibility. You know, it's a fraction. So we do that, and we haven't gone outside really greater Boston yet, but
you're not opposed.
We will at some point.
No, not at all.
Goodness, Bob.
Yeah. I mean, we've kind of find some arrangement that works with everybody, because we have our stuff to do, and this has been on both our parts. I mean, we've been buying stuff. So we've been putting money into it, but largely it's, you know, we just show up and we give talks.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's an open thing. If someone's interested, they can contact you, Chris, and through to us if you don't mind, or they can contact Matt and or me directly.
Okay. Well, guys, I'm going to thank you very much for your time. It was greatly appreciated, and I actually learned a lot about video gaming that I did not know. So I appreciate both of yours time very much.
Thank you so much.
Great to be here. Thanks so much, Chris.
That's going to wrap it up for my conversation with Gary Bartos and Matthew Schifrin on Accessible Gaming. During our conversation, several resources were mentioned to help you learn more about what games may or may not be accessible. One such website is audiogames.net. It was also suggested to research accessible gaming on both Google and Reddit. In addition to accessible gaming, Matthew mentioned Bricks for the Blind. If you would like to learn more about that, visit bricksfortheblind.org. Gary's website is echobatics.com, and his email is gary@echobatics.com. Echobatics is spelled E-C-H-O-B-A-T-I-X. You can listen to my conversation with Gary about Echobatics by visiting the podcast section of the North Carolina Reading Services website. Click on the link to Tech Tips, and then click on the March episode. To listen on Spotify, go to the Tech Tips the Podcast page and look for the episode titled Echobatics. I would like to thank Gary Bartos and Matthew Schifrin once again for their time. It was greatly appreciated. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Tech Tips. I hope you've enjoyed it. If there's something you'd like covered in a future episode, send an email to techtipspodcast@gmail.com. I'm Chris Skidmore for the North Carolina Reading Service. Tech Tips is available online by visiting our website at ncreadingservice.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have questions or comments about the North Carolina Reading Service, visit us online at ncreadingservice.org or give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Tech Tips on the North Carolina Reading Service.